Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. And finally, we've got some heat in the hot stove. We finally closed down on Shohei Ohtani this week, surprisingly going to the Angels. And of course, Giancarlo Stanton, wow, going to the Yankees. I don't think anybody saw either one of those coming. Tim and I did speak last week. We went over all 30 teams, to be honest with you, where both of those guys might show up, and we did mention both. But I don't think any of us had those in our top 10. Maybe we should have known Giancarlo Stanton would want to go to the Yankees, and the Yankees could figure out how to bring him on, and most importantly, how to bring him on and stay under that $197 million threshold that they have to stay under to break the luxury tax penalty that they've been paying for years. It's very important. Cashman's talking about it for a long time. He wants to get under the 197 for 1 year. Once he does that, it all resets to zero, and then he'll go out and spend mightily next season when all of the big guns come out. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, even Clayton Kershaw comes out, and the Yankees do need pitching. So we'll see what Tim has to say about all of this, what I have to say about this. It's going to be a fun show. And, of course, we'll talk some prospects. We're going to talk the AL East prospects, I think, or maybe the NL East. I'm not exactly sure. We're somewhere in the middle of going through our team-by-team profile of all prospects. Tim will be interviewing me about that. And speaking of the devil, there's Mr. McLeod now. Tim, good evening. How are you?
I am just fine, Rich. The devil? I tell you, what a harsh way to start off a show, the devil.
Yeah, I know, Timmy. It's the devil is in the details. The devil is everywhere. Who knows? But, Timmy, everybody's prepping for Christmas. Christmas is in 2 weeks, and Hanukkah starts this week. So hopefully we're all getting our gifts purchased. I haven't purchased the one. My wife is doing all of that for me, which is good for her because, Timmy, the gifts are bad coming from me.
Well, yeah, I'm giving the gift that keeps on giving, Rich, cash.
Jelly of the month.
That's it. On a real positive note, I met with my cardiologist on Friday. They ran me through a whole series of tests and more tests. And the good news is, as hard as this may seem to believe, I'm stable, Rich. They could
That's
lay
fantastic.
The ECGs on top. On top of each other, and it is exactly the same as the one that I had 6 months ago. No change whatsoever. So I'm pretty happy with all that. I really am.
Well, congratulations, Tim. I know it's a sigh of relief for you and a sigh of relief for all your friends and family, myself included. That's fantastic. So what are the next steps?
The next steps is tentatively starting to reduce my blood thinners towards the end of March. Which is good because I won't have to walk around with a tourniquet. Every time I bump into anything, Rich, I bleed, I bruise. I'm taking blood thinners twice a day, and I think as soon as I get off of those, that will definitely be a positive step. And basically, just to continue my regimen of walking, my physio, my improved diet, and move forward slowly but surely, not overdoing anything, but just maintaining basically what I have been for the past 6 months with some changes in the meds.
Great.
So,
good.
It is good.
How is the diet, Timmy? Has it been tough to get rid of all the bad stuff and eat healthier?
Actually, for the most part, no, it really hasn't. I used to drink a lot of Coke. You know,
we know.
I'm not drinking.
We know. We know.
The cherry Coke and the gummy bears was not a rumor, Rich. Okay, it was fact. And Basically, I've subbed in apple juice, and I'm drinking a lot more water. I mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks back, I threw in a tub of gummy bears because they went stale. I'm eliminating sugar from my diet. My caffeine is down. I haven't had too many problems with it. I'm not eating as much green stuff as I should, but small steps.
Yeah, well, there's always green gummy bears, Timmy. That might accommodate, that might help on two different avenues. Just saying. Just a thought, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you my cardiologist's number. I'll let you call her, and you can run that by her, okay, Rich? And
I think I'll pass, Timmy. I've changed my diet around just to have my stomach feel better, Timmy, and I haven't felt this good in years, and when I fall off the wagon, my stomach tells me I've fallen off the wagon. So, man, I tell you, eating the wrong stuff is just not good. And it's the root of a lot of the problems that we have is what we put in our body from a food standpoint. And after living on a fairly, kind of just a meat and vegetables and fruit kind of diet for 6 months, Timmy, I feel like a new person. So I'm just really interested in you changing your diet because I know it helped me greatly.
Yeah, it's I think the bigger thing will be, the blood thinners. Definitely the diet has helped, but, getting off some of them. I'm taking 11 pills a day right now, and somehow that can't be good for me long term, I don't think, Rich.
It wasn't good for me
in the 70s.
that's for sure. Well, Timmy, it's been quite the week in baseball. After literally boring week after week after week, we finally had a movement on what I guess everybody was waiting on, and that is Shohei Ohtani, where he would sign, and then the Giancarlo Stanton signing or trade. Let's dig into those, because first question to you is, what were you more surprised, Stanton going to the Yankees or Ohtani going to the Angels?
They're both shockers, but I'm going to have to go with Ohtani. There's no way on earth I would have ever picked him to land with the Angels. As a matter of fact, I generated some groans and applause with my statement, Rich, that the last time they heard the words Ohtani mentioned this much in L.A., it was the Chuck Finley era.
Yeah, I saw that post out there for you. That was very, very funny. So I do have a question for you. I mean, it was a surprise. It surprised all of us. Nobody guessed that. But I'm wondering, in hindsight, because it's always easy to play armchair quarterback, is Ohtani more like Mike Trout than we ever thought? That he's just a baseball scrub that wanted to be on the West Coast but didn't want the bright lights of Los Angeles, and quite frankly, wanted to play with Mike Trout.
I think that's a very legitimate point. I think Ohtani wants to be the best player that he can possibly be, and I think playing with Trout will provide him good motivation. Not that he needs any, because his work ethic is second to none. He's self-driven, self-motivated, and when you look at the Anaheim rotation, I think he's their ace.
An all deference to Parker Bridwell, who had a very nice second half of the season. I don't think Ohtani will have much in the way of that. But it's funny. Somebody tweeted at me, "Do you think they'll start him in the minors?" And I said, the only transition they'll have is they'll probably start him the third game of the season as opposed to the first game of the season. No way he starts in the minors. They put him right in the major leagues. I don't see him starting opening day. That might be a bit much, but you can see him starting the second or third game of the season for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be shocked if he opened. I really wouldn't. I think he is that caliber of pitcher, and I think he would want to rise to that occasion. I really do. I don't know if it'll happen, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if it did. And I think one of the other things that has occurred as a result of this that nobody has really mentioned a whole heck of a lot is I'm relatively certain that Anaheim has made a commitment to Ohtani that they are going to field the best team they possibly can. So I think there's more pitching coming towards the Angels, and I think they need a third baseman. I wouldn't be shocked at all if we see Mike Moustakas landing with the Angels as well. They're not done, and I think some commitments had to be made to Ohtani to assure him that the team was going to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's they had to make some commitments, and we know because Manfred's already come out, and they're definitely – they said whoever signs Ohtani, there will be an investigation to make sure there's no monkey business going on because they are definitely afraid of some kind of, you know, little thing that they do next year where they rip up the contract and they sign them to a team-friendly $100 million deal or something like that. So they got to be really careful with the financial stuff Manfred's already said he'll throw the book at them. So there's got to be some other softer kind of commitments they made, like fielding the best team. And they can say that when they got the best player in the game, no deference to any other player in the major leagues. It is Mike Trout, and it's not close. I could see them bringing in Yu Darvish, Timmy, or bringing in Mike Moustakas to play third base. They need pitching, and they definitely need a couple more bats.
Yeah, you know, I think Manfred's talking through his – I think he's talking through his butt, to be honest with you, Rich, because how can they prove anything? If Ohtani goes out this year, wins Rookie of the Year, okay, and, say, wins 14 games with a 3.40, 3.50 ERA, strikes out 180, why can't the Angels buy out his 5 years for $100 million and call it a day? There's nothing wrong with that. It's not against the rules. And how do they prove that anything was per se agreed to in advance? Who's going to fess up to that? The Angels, Ohtani, or his agents? So I really don't think Manfred has anything to go by or anything to attempt to prove. He can't prove anything, I don't think, unless somebody says something. And who's going to do that?
So I would love then for Ohtani to do exactly that, Rookie of the Year, 14-15 wins, and then they buy out his last 5 years of the contract. I'd love to see that, Timmy, because that would make it a lot of fun for us to talk about and watch Manfred go crazy trying to prove this. But we've seen it in the NFL where, boy, they go after these guys, and Major League Baseball will do the same thing. They'll try everything they can to figure out what happened. And the question will be, do the Angels have the guts to do something like that? And we'll have to see, Timmy. It'll be fascinating.
Yeah, I can see that scenario arising. And you know what? It's not like teams – Tampa Bay has played that game for years. They'll keep players down, okay? And Longoria was an example. They just did it with Kiermaier, but Longoria was a big example. You know, they'll say to a player, okay, you know, you want to play for us right now? Sign a 4 or 5 year agreement, right? Mm-hmm. And away we go. We'll bring you up. We'll play you right now. And life is good. So it's not something that doesn't happen on a regular basis. It's just a little bit more high profile in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's interesting because what Manfred's job is, you know, above everything else, I mean, he works for the owners. And his job is first and foremost, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, is to keep salaries down. That is his job. Don't make anything about competitive and all that. That's all nonsense. His first five jobs are to keep salaries in check, and he wants to do that. He's okay with them giving Longoria a team-friendly deal because that keeps salaries down. But, you know, paying Ohtani anything that was close to market value, which would probably have been $150 to $200 million, he doesn't have anything to do with that. And that's what he's going to try to do because that's his job.
Well, yeah, it's sort of funny, isn't it, that the – owners need somebody to protect themselves from themselves.
I totally agree. Yeah. What was maddening about the whole thing is I guess the owners have to protect themselves from themselves or have somebody to do that. But they should have just made an exception for Ohtani and said, look, this guy is a special talent. Let's make some special rule out and let's pay him more than $3.5 million and, you know, and just call it a day or make him a free agent in 3 years. There should have been something because the kid basically, I mean, we talked about it last week, instead of working for another 2 years in Japan, comes over immediately and screws himself over financially. So in the short term, you know, I mean, I just think that Major League Baseball should have done the right thing, should have stepped up. But no, I mean, it's all about keeping salaries in check, and that's what they did.
Well, yeah, and you got to remember, Rich, who was the person on behalf of Bud Selig that redid the posting agreement 2 years ago?
Yeah, it would have been Manfred. So, I mean, he's a labor relations guy. So this is his thing. This is what he knows how to do. And, you know, I guess kudos for him for keeping Ohtani making next to nothing, making him the bargain of the century. And congratulations to the Angels for reeling him in. I mean, Billy Epler, Timmy, he must have made a great presentation. And all those trips when he was with the Yankees to go see Ohtani pitch when he was 15, 16 years old, that had to pay off.
Yeah, my guess is the room that they did the interview in had Mike Trout wallpaper on it, Rich.
You know, Timmy, I have to, as I said at the top of this discussion, I have to believe Mike Trout was a part of it. I mean, let's profile these two guys, and they're eerily similar. I mean, Ohtani's is a baseball rat who doesn't want the limelight. At least that's what we understand. Lives in the dorm. All he wants to do is eat, breathe, and play baseball. And Mike Trout's the same guy. This is a family kid. He still lives with his parents. I think he finally moved out of his parents' basement. This is just a normal kid who just happens to be really, really good in baseball. That almost seems like who Ohtani is. And you know, I can see him wanting to relate to a guy like Mike Trout as opposed to Yasiel Puig in Los Angeles or where all the other big stars are. I think it had to play.
I think it definitely played, Rich. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, like I said in one post on Facebook, you know, obviously they're now BFFs.
Yeah, they have to be. I thought it was funny that Aaron Judge sent the tweet out to off to Giancarlo Stanton asking, "Are we now best friends as well?" So, I mean, we're going to get to that in a few minutes. But let's go back to Ohtani. So, Timmy, is this enough? And I think their answer is no, because you've got some ideas what the Angels have to do to really make it competitive. They now have got clearly the best player in baseball, and if nothing else, the most intriguing player in baseball, in Ohtani. That doesn't necessarily bring them the division championship. What do they need to do to overtake the Houston Astros?
This year, not much. Houston's got a loaded team. But what they have done is they've secured a 23-year-old pitcher who has the potential to be one of the top three pitchers in the game. I'm not saying he's going to be that right away, but the potential is there. They could have potentially the best bat and the best pitcher in the game for the next, I don't know how long Trout signed for, but for however long Trout is there, they have two really good pieces. As far as competing in right now, they need to get another pitcher, and they need to get some power at third base. And if they can fill those two voids, I think they can be a very competitive club and surprise some people this year. They're not a playoff club, not yet, but they're heading in the right direction.
I agree. I think they're two or three players away. I think they need a better bullpen. I think they definitely need another top of the rotation starting pitcher. I would love to see them sign Yu Darvish. And I think you're right. They need a third baseman, and Mike Moustakas, I think, will be expensive because he is a Scott Boras client, but I don't think he'll be as expensive as everybody thinks he will be. And Los Angeles, I mean, Timmy, they might as well go for it.
Well, yeah, there's no point now in laying back or laying off, wind it up and go for it. And, you know, wouldn't that be fascinating if Darvish did sign with the Angels?
Well, you know, you've said it well. I mean, we hope. Well, they might have made financial promises to Ohtani, and if they didn't, let's say they followed the rules. You know, they made other promises, and Yu Darvish is a guy he trains with, and don't be surprised they said we're going to do our very best to bring in Yu Darvish.
No, I wouldn't be shocked if that discussion was somehow brought up in their private interview. No, that wouldn't shock me at all.
So what's fun about Ohtani?
He needs a translator.
What's fun about Ohtani is we always like to talk about their stat line. So first of all, give me the pitching stat line, Timmy. Wins, strikeouts, and ERA.
Okay, 13 wins, 180 strikeouts, and a 3.45 ERA.
I think that's pretty reasonable. Did you know what Yu Darvish did his first year?
Not off the top of my head, but it was impressive. I know that.
Yeah,
I
but I mean, that,
what
you said was impressive, and I'm wondering if, and I remember Darvish's ERA has always been a little elevated. I'm wondering if it was kind of a comparable thing where he wasn't Yu Darvish yet. 2012, 191 innings, a 390 ERA, and he won 16 games. So, and then followed by a 283 ERA. So, you know, this is a guy who had that elevated ERA, and he said 345, which felt a little elevated to me. But I think that's reasonable given a first introduction to Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think you're looking at probably 170 innings pitched. 165, 170. That would be my guess. I'm going a little low on my innings pitch estimate. But I don't think you're going to see the same level of walks out of Ohtani that we saw out of Darvish. That was his bugaboo in the first year. Was he walked almost 90 batters and slowly reduced that his walk rates over the next few years. So I'm not anticipating seeing Ohtani walk nearly the level that Darvish did. And hey, pitching in Texas versus pitching in LA could also have a bearing on things.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, the Los Angeles Angels and Anaheim, that is a pitching ballpark. So I know I'll be watching a lot of early Angels games. That's for sure. Timmy, I did send you an article of batters, former Major League Baseball players who had pitched against Ohtani and also hit against Ohtani. And, you know, it really talked about some of the things I talked about last week, where fastball has got a lot of velocity, but it is straight. That's what all three of the guys they interviewed. But just wicked, you know, secondary pitches, particularly his forkball, you know, whatever, you know, split or whatever the heck you want to call it. It's as good as every other Japanese pitcher that comes out, except he throws 100 miles an hour and with a split or a forkball that just drops off the table, and that's what's going to get him nasty. But, I mean, they said it to me. His fastball is a little straight, so you could see a few more home runs from him than you might have seen with some other pitchers that came over.
Yeah, the funny thing I thought about that article is I think one of the players interviewed, was Stephen Romero. And, you know, Romero was saying that the fastball was straight, but, you know, he repeatedly struck him out. So I guess take it for what it's worth, right?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, Stephen Romero, it was coming up to the Seattle organization. It was, you know, he's a marginal baseball player. And, you know, so maybe somebody who's not a marginal baseball player could catch up to it. Obviously he could not, but yeah, it is good to get guys who, you know, were Major League Baseball players or, you know, I mean, that is a skill and some level of talent just to get their perspective. But let's talk about the bat of Ohtani. And I have no idea. I kind of buy your number of innings with him pitching and things like that, assuming health. I have no idea how much he's going to play in the field or play designated hitter. So give me home runs, RBIs, and batting average.
9 home runs, 35 RBIs, and a .270 batting average.
Well, that bums me out, Timmy. I'm not excited about that at all. So you have to believe he is going to, what, twice a week play designated hitter then?
2 to 3 times a week is what I'm anticipating, because they got this guy named Albert Pujols, right? How many games is Albert Pujols going to play at first base, because that's their option, because LA's already said he's not going to play in the outfield. No shock there. They don't want him trying to hit the cutoff man from right field. So you're looking at how many games can Albert play at first base? I think the Angels, they want the arm. That's where all the interest is. And they'll accommodate him to some extent as a hitter, but I don't think they're going to give him 450 at bats. Now, that being said, If Ohtani goes out in April and hits 5 home runs in 50 at-bats, you might see higher numbers than that. But then what do they do with Albert? Sit him on the bench?
Well, I mean, at some point, I mean, they're going to have to. This is a guy that, you know, what was his on-base percentage was sub 300 last year. I mean, this is not a good player anymore.
No, it's hard to believe we're talking about him and Billy Hamilton in the same breath, right?
Yeah, Albert Pujols is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's not any good anymore. This
is a
this is below league average player. He's below replacement level player. When you have a 290 on base percentage and hit 22 home runs, you're below average.
But there's still that 100 RBI sitting there. I'm actually going to buy Albert this year, Rich, if I get him as late as what I've seen him going in mocks. I've seen him going in the 20th, 22nd round. I'll take 100 RBIs there. I'm not shy.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, it's probably because of where he's hitting in the lineup. But, you know, I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with his skill set. But, you know, I mean, 600 plate appearances? You would hope it's 600 plate appearances, 636 plate appearances on 101 RBIs. That's what you expect. It's interesting. His strikeout rate is still really good. I mean, he's just his batting average of balls in play is down to 250 level. You go, well, that'll bounce back. Not when you can't run. And, I mean, he's just got chronic problems with his plantar fascia tendon, and he's just a shell of himself. And it's sad, I mean, because the batting eye is still there and still can hit. It just, you know, the physical movements aren't there.
Yeah, no, it's painful to watch him run. It really is. And who knows, maybe with the 10-day DL, Albert might end up with a couple extra DL stints this year.
I mean, I think he's going to play more first base than we thought. I mean, is he going to play over C.J. Cron? That'll be interesting. Timmy did come up as a third baseman. So just saying, they need somebody to play third base. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm going to file that one away, Rich.
All right. Well, yeah, have to say it just in case it happens, and then we can tell everybody we told you. So that's the whole idea.
We told you first. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. You know, Freddie Freeman would be an upgrade. How's that?
Freddie Freeman. He did okay at third base. So. I hear you, Timmy. Let me get back over because I was going to. Do a real quick break, and when we get back, I can't find the studio. Here's the studio, Tim. When we get back, we're going to talk about the fun and games we had with Giancarlo Stanton, which was just as shocking as Ohtani. Once again, easy to play armchair quarterback. If you take a look at the Ohtani signing, you could definitely see why the Angels would appeal to him. Hard to know that going in, but you look back and go, yeah, that does. I can see that. Same thing with Giancarlo Stanton, Timmy. He looked like, you know, he's from Los Angeles. He felt like he was going to go to Los Angeles, but they did not want him. They did not want him, Timmy. So where does he go? Well, the other big bright lights. So he goes to New York. And a ridiculous deal. I mean, just ridiculous. I know there's a lot of people out on Twitter going, I mean, Derek Jeter still being paid by the Yankees. It was collusion. I don't think that. But, man, Starlin Castro, Jorge Guzman, who I know everybody's hot on it because he could throw 100 miles an hour. But, I mean, the fastball straight. He has no secondary pitches. He's 22 years old in January. Hasn't even pitched, you know, in full season ball. And I have not had a chance to see him. I did not see him when he was pitching in Staten Island. I tried to go out and see him because I heard all the hubbub. But I've talked to numerous people that have seen him and said, yeah, he's got a great arm, but he's a long, long way away. And being 22, I don't know. That's the best prospect they got. And they got Rafael Devers' cousin, which, you know, he's an organizational guy. And they still paid $30 million of a salary. It was a great deal for the Yankees. I almost see no downside in it at all.
Well, the only downside is I think it's limited what they can look at potentially down the road, because there's some real interesting, you know, real interesting situations in New York. You know, there was talk about, you know, Machado and Bryce Harper. Well, I think they've made their commitment now and made their bed, and I think those two players won't be part of the future plans unless they can find some way. Like, there's some interesting, like, Didi Gregorius, okay, he made 5-1 last year. He's in arbitration, okay, this year eligible. He's looking at a big raise. You know, you got Mr. Hicks. He made $1.35 million last year. He's going arbitration eligible this year. Jacoby Ellsbury, $20.14 million for the next 3 years, and he has a full no-trade clause and he doesn't want to leave New York. So there's some interesting money situations coming up as far as the Yankees are concerned. And I think with all of that thrown into a pot, I think it rules them out of the Machado and Harper sweepstakes.
Yeah, well, let's break it down a little bit, because Joel Sherman wrote a really good article, which, you know, he was very concerned about the money. And basically, it's all about breaking the $197 million threshold, and the Yankees have to do that to reset their luxury tax. That's what they have to do this year to reset it. And I gave you the math, Timmy, and basically Giancarlo Stanton, if the Marlins pay $30 million of his salary, that makes him against the cap at $22 million. All of a sudden, that's somewhat, for an MVP player, that's somewhat price okay. You know, I mean, that's what they cost. He might get him a little bit on the cheap, particularly if the crazy numbers they're throwing out for Bryce Harper are accurate. And now by trading Starlin Castro, that saves him another $8 million. So all of a sudden, Joel Sherman does the math, and all the players he thinks estimate of what they'll get, they'll still have $14 or $15 million to spend on another pitcher, which he was claiming like was a Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb-level pitcher, which I think the Yankees could have, and still break below that. Once they break below that, they can spend like drunken sailors next year. I think they don't go after Harper, but I do think they go after Manny Machado. I think Bryce Harper gets hurt in this, because is he going to go to the Dodgers? I mean, what big money team is he going to go to if the Yankees are out of the Bryce Harper sweepstakes next year?
Rumor has it the Cubs would be all in on him, but there's a very, very select few teams that would. See, I heard the $30 million is on the back half of that contract after the opt-out years.
So the way it works, though, is there's a cap. So if you get paid $25 million over 10 years and you get paid a dollar for 9 years and all $250 million in the 10th year, it's still considered, you know, the total contract divided by the number of years. So that $30 million gets spread across, and that's how they came up with it. That's my understanding and reading, you know, all the many articles I've read about how this stuff works. So it's against the cap. It's not against the financials. And the Yankees have no problems with the financials. They have more money than anybody.
Yeah.
They are tired of paying a 50% premium on, you know, for nothing. And that's what they want to get out of, because they're getting close to $100 million that they're throwing back into the pool for nothing. It's a tax. I mean, they get no value from that at all. And that's what they're trying to get out of.
Well, yeah, and you know, one of the easiest ways to avoid that would be to find a way to move Ellsbury, but I don't think that's going to happen, is it?
Well, only, you know, if they could get him to move, for one, and just saving, you know, getting somebody to pick up what is he owed, $60 million, you know, throwing in a really good prospect and having them pay $10 million of it or something like that would be, you know, be worth it. And, you know, so let's say the fascinating thing is they didn't have to give away any of their big prospects. Clint Frazier, all of a sudden, Timmy, becomes expendable in this whole equation, I think, particularly with Aaron Hicks looking like a legit center fielder, even if he only hits 240, 250, he's a gold glove center fielder. You flank him with Stanton and Aaron Judge. That's a tremendous outfield when Brett Gardner moves on. Why do they need Clint Frazier? I think he becomes the trade chip, and maybe they make some other team pick up Ellsbury and give him a little bit of savings across that contract.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sure they'd love to do something with Ellsbury, but, you know, unless they've also got Chase Headley for $13 million this year that they'd obviously like to move as well. You know, when you look at the outfield, you've got Stanton, you got Judge, and you've got one of Gardner or Hicks with the other one at DH. Is Stanton going to want a DH full time at this stage of his career? I don't know. That might be a tough sell. You might see Aaron Hicks as your DH this year, spelled off with Ellsbury on occasion. It's going to be tricky to see how they make all these parts work.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton has not been a picture of health in his entire career.
Oh, no, but most of his injuries haven't been a result of anything in the field. It's I think most of them have been when he's been actually hitting, right?
Well, both have been, you know, I know he missed considerable time with two hamate surgeries. He blew out, but they don't have any more hamates, so they're gone. So that at least, but you know, he's not. The fact is, he has not been a picture of health. No matter how he's hurt himself, he's not a guy that's played a whole lot of games. Aaron Hicks, another 6'7", 6'8" guy. You know, Timmy, those guys, big guys, have a tendency to get hurt. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so they're going to need, my guess is, all four of those outfielders. What they don't need is Jacoby Ellsbury. I mean, he doesn't add a whole lot of value for them.
No, he definitely doesn't. But it's going to be interesting to see how they work that through. And you know what? Based on the fact that Judge and Stanton could be hitting back-to-back, or they will be hitting definitely very close in the order, there could be a lot of solo home runs happening as well, because you're looking at, between the two of them, if they play a season, you're looking at potentially 110 home runs. And not everybody's going to be on base with all that power. So, you know, I don't mean to sound like negative, but I really think it could, in fact, decrease the RBI potential out of both those players. Does that make sense?
All right, so exactly where I was going to go, Timmy. And, you know, there's, you know, in football or basketball, there's only one ball. They put all these stars on one team, and you only got one ball. And you know, you've only got X number of players on base. And I think you could see, would Stanton get 120 RBIs and Judge 100-plus RBIs? I mean, is there going to be that many RBIs out there? Or is it going to be a Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant type of situation where they hit back to bat, and Chris Bryant hit, what, 75 RBIs this year?
Yeah, it wasn't outstanding. No, definitely.
So, I mean, I think that's a real possibility. And, you know, I don't know what you do at the draft table, because they're both arguably bottom of the first round, top of the second round talent. I don't know if you discount that, or you just, I don't know what you do.
Well, I'm discounting, I won't own Judge anyways. I'm discounting him because I have fears with regards to the batting average. OBP leagues is a different story, but it wouldn't cause me to move earlier on Judge. I'll leave it at that.
And Stanton, I mean, you got to think Yankee Stadium, he's going to flick a dozen home runs to right field. I mean, it'd be great if he was a lefty. That's what Bryce Harper, everybody was so drooling about Bryce Harper in the short right field porch. But I mean, Stanton's going to hit flares, Timmy. That would be, you know, like foul balls. He's going to basically put them in right at the porch in right field. It's going to be impressive.
Yeah, I think somebody out there did a translation on his 59 last year with Miami and put it into the equivalent of dimensions of Yankee Stadium, and I think they came up with a projection of like 75 home runs, something like that.
That's awesome. That's totally awesome. I mean, you're going to see pop-ups, Timmy, I'm telling you, that are just going to go in the stands. A lot like we saw with Judge. I mean, we saw the same thing, except this Giancarlo Stanton, as strong and as big as Judge is. I mean, Stanton's just today, I mean, he's a better home run hitter. He's got more experience, and not to say that Judge can't catch up to him, but this is a guy that knows how to put loft on the ball.
Well, yeah, I have no idea what to come up with for an estimate as far as Stanton with a healthy full season. And, you know, you got to start at 60, I think, and go from there.
I think you do, which is stupid. You can't put that into a spreadsheet. But I think you have to say that you'd be disappointed anything less than 55, and you would hope he'd be in the 60s, maybe even more. I know that sounds crazy, but Timmy, he's got, I mean, it's just going to be crazy in Yankee Stadium. And at some of those other shorts, I mean, he played in Miami Marlins, was terrible ballpark, but the Washington Nationals is not a good ballpark to hit in. Met Stadium or Citi Field's not a good, I mean, you're talking Fenway Park. He's going to be playing 10 games in Fenway Park. I mean, come on. He might knock the Fenway Park monster over.
How many is he playing in Toronto at the Homer Dome?
Exactly. So they play 19 in division games. So it's either 9 or 10, depending on who gets the four-game series. I don't know if you saw, there's a great somebody did a picture of the new wall and with Stanton coming the new wall and
yeah,
and Fenway
that.
Park. You see, it's like 10 stories high. It's like, yeah, that's
Boston
pretty much.
Yeah, they'll limit its power in that park. They'll find a way, right?
Yeah, let's go to the Marlins, Timmy. And I got to tell you, you know, it's tough. I do a lot of financial stuff, so I understand debt load and the leverage that you can have, tremendous leverage on your debt, and everybody's afraid of interest rates going up, and they will be going up, and that's just going to – that puts that interest load on there. So you never want to be heavily leveraged, which – what, they spend $1.2 billion, and most of that was in debt, and they need some operating capital, Timmy, to pay off that debt and be able to, you know, just survive. So they had to get rid of some of their payroll. I get the math, and I understand it from a business standpoint. But putting the baseball hat on, this and D. Gordon, we're going to talk about him in a minute, that was their big chits. I mean, those were the two big guys that they could move to get players. And they didn't get anybody in Giancarlo Stanton trade. And they almost got next to nothing in moving D. Gordon. So you have to give – Derek Jeter, I mean, like, bad grades in this trade.
Well, you know what's even more mind-boggling is, again, I'm going to go back to my analogy about the car, Rich. Like, hey, don't buy it if you can't afford to put gas in it. And they shouldn't have bought it if that's the case. Because if you take a look, one of the chips going to the Marlins, okay, in the Stanton deal is supposed to be, okay, Starlin Castro, right?
Mm-hmm. So they'll probably trade him. Timmy.
Well, yeah, because you know what? If they don't, D. Gordon was for 2018 is $10.5 million. 2019, $13 million. Castro is $10 million and $11 million for those same 2 years. Now, if they're nickel and diming over $3 million between Gordon and Starlin Castro, if that's going to make a difference to their team, they got bigger problems than we think.
Yeah, and I have to believe. I mean, they're comparable players. I mean, again, D. Gordon's got way more speed, but we care more about speed and the fantasy game than Major League Baseball cares about speed and the real baseball game. But let's say that they're comparable players. You got to get more for D. Gordon than Nick Niederd. I mean, I saw him pitch in the California League. In fact, he went to the All-Star game where it was literally 105 degrees. So, Timmy, I'm not sure my radar gun was working all that well. We're talking a 91 to 92 mile an hour fastball that wasn't impressive. The secondary pitches are. This is a number four, number five pitcher. This is not a great talent. That was the main player they got back for D. Gordon. I don't understand that.
And D. Gordon's on a team friendly contract, $10.5 million,
exactly.
$13 million,
$13.5 million, nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's one of the top second basemen in the game on a team-friendly contract, and they got nothing back. You know, somebody mentioned to me, you know, is Derek Jeter going to be going to the winter meetings? And my thoughts are definitely yes, because there'll always be an extra chair, okay, available for him, either at the New York or the Seattle table. Pick one.
That's right. I mean, it's he did bad, Timmy, and again, I get the whole debt load, and I know they had to move that contract, but you know, now they're going to have to move somebody like Marcelo Osuna. They have to rebuild that farm system because it is bad, Timmy. This is what I do for a living, well, kind of a living. That system is not very good, and if they don't get an injection of talent in there, it's going to be forever before they're good. And, you know, they got to look at increasing revenue. The only reason you increase revenue is to have a good quality product on the field. So they've got to address that at some point. And that means moving guys. That means it's got to be Marcell Ozuna or other big-time players that are still ARB eligible. I mean, I think that's the only other course they have.
Well, I think probably at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, the agent for Marcell Ozuna, the agent for Christian Yelich, and the agent for Jacob Realmuto, they're all camped out, okay, in Jeter's lobby, okay, wanting to be the first one to get their player out of there. How does that sound?
I have to, and I think all three of those guys could bring back a lot of really good young minor league players, and that might be what they have to do. Because if they're not going to build around D. Gordon, who I know is 30, they're not going to build around Giancarlo Stanton, why not just bust it all down? They have no pitching. So why not just break the whole thing down, but got to get players in return?
Well, and they should be able to get players for some of those players simply because I think Realmuto is heading into his first year of arbitration, but he was $530,000 or $17,000, whatever minimum was. That's what Realmuto was last year. So, yeah, they should be able to get something for Realmuto. But I can't see any of these younger players wanting to stay in Miami right now. Can you?
No. What's the point? You know, it's bad ballpark. Bad ballpark. No fans come to it. It's no fun to be down there. I mean, Miami's a great place to live. So, I mean, there is that value. But, man, I would think it'd be a bummer game after game after game when you've got nobody sitting in that stadium.
Well, yeah. And the other thing that I think has to be taken into consideration is that down the road, okay, say Jeter rebuilds, okay, and he gets a slew of prospects, and over the next 4 to 5 years, okay, he rebuilds that system, right? And he makes that team into a fairly competitive team. What free agent is going to look at Miami after what has happened in the past week, even 5 years down the road? You know what I mean? It boils back to Jeffrey Loria telling Jose Reyes, yeah, buy a house, don't worry about it, and a week later you're traded. If there's no trust in the organization, when it comes time that they need the pieces, they're not going to get them, Rich.
Yeah, what I don't understand is, you know, Jim Crane bought the Houston Astros. Again, I don't want to talk about the Astros a lot, partially because I really respect what they're doing, but I also know fairly intimately what they're doing. Jim Crane and Jeff Luhnow, after he hired Jeff Luhnow, they had a plan. The plan, and it was a very well-publicized plan. We're going to stink for 3 years, and then we're going to quickly turn it around. Now, it worked. Has Jeter talked about a plan? No, he's just talked about, I got to cut costs. Not about, I got to cut costs, bring in young talent so I can build the team up in 5 years. It's nothing about baseball. It's all about, we can't afford this team that we just spent. Exactly your analogy. We just bought a car that we can't afford.
Well, yeah. So why did you buy it in the first place? Do they plan on moving it to Montreal in a few years?
Maybe that's the end game, Timmy. It's funny, you know this, and I haven't shared this too much, but my wife and I just bought a beach house. In fact, we closed on it at December 29th. We're very excited about it. It's a beautiful piece of property, but it needs work, Timmy. I mean, you find out when you go buy a house that's we had the inspection done. Before the inspector went in the house, I go, "What do you expect to find?" He goes, "Water damage." He goes, "Yeah, all houses are built so that the water flows down, but on the beach the water comes sideways because the wind's blowing so hard with hurricanes, it comes in sideways, but it's always water damage." So of course there's some water damage, nothing too serious, and the house needs bathrooms, and we knew that going into it, so we budgeted money to fix the house, to do the things. And it wasn't like, oh my gosh, let's buy this. We spent our last nickel for the house, and we can't, so we have to sit there with a leaky roof and a leaky, no, you have to buy it and know what you're doing. And what your story about the car really resonated with me personally, because I know what's going on in my personal life now, but I think it's so apropos with what's happening in the Marlins. They can't afford this team.
Well, no, it's like you buying your beach house and saying, well, it's no big deal. We'll just go to we'll use the washrooms at the 7-Eleven two blocks over, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, we'll put a little gum next to that little hole in the side. And it won't matter, termites are prevalent in all beach areas. The termites don't really like moisture or rotting wood. They'll never go there. You have to fix it. Fortunately, no termites, but again, rotting wood attracts termites, just FYI, so you have to fix that stuff. So,
well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think maybe in the haste to want to be a team owner, maybe there was some missing thought that went into the process, or at least it appears it's that way right now.
Yeah, it just feels like the ownership really stretched on this team. And again, we've seen it before. Again, the Astros, they broke it down. The Cubs, when they were, their new organization, they broke it down. But they built the baseball back up. And Jeter's got to start talking about baseball really, really soon, or people are going to go, what the heck are you guys doing? Is this Jeffrey Luria? Is he still running the show? It's the same mentality.
Well, the difference is Luria's got a couple of World Series under his belt. I can see 10 games in, the Marlins are 1-9, and Jeter's sitting up in the owner's box, looking down, smiling at his product, and the fans are chanting, Jeffrey.
No. You know, Timmy, it's funny, you know, this is Derek Jeter, you know, one of the, I don't know, the ambassadors of the game. He's Derek Jeter, the captain. I mean, everybody, you know, instant respect no matter where he goes. I mean, he always held, you know, he's always a champion and everybody loves the guy, but it's not going to take very long before you're right. I mean, his name's going to be mud down in Miami. Might already be there.
Well, and you know what, on a positive note, though, he will get a thank you card from Brian Cashman, because apparently Cashman on Friday is in the process of signing a 5-year extension for $25 million. So there's got to be some thank yous involved in that, right?
It surely does, Timmy. It surely does. One other quick signing I thought was interesting, went well below the radar, was the Cubs signed Tyler Chatwood. And I owned Tyler Chatwood in one league last year, and I pitched him away from home because
right.
His home ERA was 3.49, and his ERA at Coors Field, to me, 6.01. A guy that doesn't strike out a ton of player, more of a command and control type of pitcher, but I think he could have some success in the Cubs, and I think it was a sneaky good signing.
Yeah, I think it is a sneaky sort of signing, as long as one doesn't overly inflate, you know, those home numbers. Let's face it, when the wind's blowing out in Chicago, it's not a good thing either. But I think it's a positive move on a reasonably friendly contract. Well, what's friendly? He signed, was it $38 million or something like that for Tyler Chatwood? Darvish must be smiling right about now, and Arrieta the same, but there is some intrigue there. He's moved from my who cares list to he's got a little bit of attention. How's that?
And look, man, I think there's four or five teams that when they get acquired by these teams, I sit up and listen. I'll tell you who they are. Of course, one is the Houston Astros. We can see what they've done, the players that they've brought in and what they've done. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates, pitchers they brought in, Timmy, you have to wake up and go, I'm instantly interested in that player. I mean, because they've done it time and time again where they bought in guys that you said, they're just okay, and they've done very, very
right.
Well. I take a look at the Los Angeles Dodgers, the same kind of profile. They seem to push the right buttons. And quite frankly, the Cubs are in that camp as well. They brought in – I mean, look at Jake Arrieta, a guy they brought in from Baltimore – and they turn him into a star, and he's not the only one that they've done that with. So there are teams, Timmy, that have a good eye for talent, a really good eye from a metrics and analytics standpoint, and know some of the players to bring in, and really good development systems that can help these guys make some changes. And I'm very interested in Tyler Chatwood from a fantasy standpoint this year.
That makes a lot of sense, Rich. And like I said, he's caught my attention. I want to see what he does in the spring, and we'll go from there.
Timmy, I'm tired of talking, man, because I'm going to take a quick break when I get back. You're on deck, man, because we're going to be talking National League East prospects.
Sounds good, Rich.
As the great Tim McLeod clears his throat in preparation for taking over the reins, you guys can stop hearing me drone on about stuff, and I get to finally be the analyst, Timmy. So it's all you, my friend.
Well, and you know what? You're not going to stop talking, Rich. I'm just going to fire questions at you, very short-form questions. I'm going to let you continue talking, just sitting in the other chair. How about we start with the Washington Nationals? When does Victor Robles arrive on the big scene? When do we see him with Washington playing every day, Rich?
Boy, you know, Timmy, that's a good question. That outfield is, you know, they've got a lot of it. Let's think about the outfield. This is a question I wasn't prepared for. So you got to believe that Adam Eaton's going to come back, right? So you figure
yep.
He's your starting center fielder. And Bryce Harper's there. He's playing right. Who plays left field? Is it, you know, they got to make room for the guy, the breakout guy. Used to play center field when Eaton went out. Timmy, who was that?
They got a couple options there. They got Michael Taylor and they got Brian
Michael
Goodwin
Taylor.
In center.
Yep.
Yeah. There's your basic. I think they're looking at Victor in center field. So you're looking at Taylor and Goodwin with the emphasis on Taylor, and then you got Harper in right and Adam Eaton in left. So it appears as if there is some players.
There's no room.
Over.
Yeah. There's no room. Harper's not going anywhere. They gave half the team away for Adam Eaton now in left field. So that means that Victor Robles has got to crawl over Michael Taylor. I think he can probably crawl over Brian Goodwin. So they have to move Brian Taylor. If they move Brian Taylor, I think you see a lot of Victor Robles. If not, I don't think you see much of him unless Michael Taylor gets hurt. Then you probably see Brian Goodwin. I don't think you see a lot of Victor Robles, at least this year, Timmy.
So even though he's ranked as one of the top 5-10 prospects right now, we probably won't be looking at him until 2019. Is your assessment
top three, Timmy? I would say it's you got to go with Ronald Acuna as the number one prospect. I mean, I love Victor Robles, but I mean Ronald Acuna, what he's done, it's got to be the top guy in the minor leagues right now. Victor Robles, you can make an argument for him. Vlad Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis, those are your top guys. And Victor Robles is in that. But why would they bring him up if they're not going to play him? I think if Bryce Harper, when he gets out of Dodge next year, I think you definitely see him in 2019. But unless there's injuries, I don't think you see him next year. I think you see him in 2019.
Perfect. That's basically exactly what I wanted to know, Rich. Your number two prospect in Washington, Juan Soto, you've got him pegged potentially as a top 10 outfield. Very, very bullish. Why so you like him that much, my friend?
Well, he's got a great swing. He's got more power. I compared him, I think, to Robles in the write-up. Tim, it's been so long ago since I wrote this. I'm trying to remember when I wrote about him. But he's that my
right.
The player – big time talent, a really good hit tool, big time power, less speed than a Victor Robles, but it's another guy that, you know, he could probably in a couple of years, you know, you'd be talking at Victor Robles, Juan Soto, and I guess Adam Eaton. I would think they'd probably move Adam Eaton and have Michael Taylor. You're looking at an all-star caliber outfielder. Juan Soto is the real deal. This guy can hit with power. You know, it's funny. I talked about Victor Robles taking over Bryce Harper. It's really Juan Soto is more Bryce Harper. Victor Robles is more Mike Trout type of all-around kind of five-tool player as opposed to Juan Soto is more of that power guy that you're going to see in right field.
Okay, no, fair enough. I probably used this line before, but I can't pass on it. Does Carter Kaboom blow up this year, Rich?
Yeah, it's his brothers in the Seattle organization. It's a nice little player. I mean, he's a guy that's basically hurt most of last year and fell off. People don't lose sight of Carter Kaboom. I mean, this is a kid that not only 80 grade name, but a kid that can really, really play shortstop. Probably will stay at shortstop. You could see him in the major leagues in a couple of years. Only made it to low A. I think he makes it to double A this year. And again, starting to sniff the major leagues in 2019. Really surprisingly strong system at the top, which means that they've got strength to trade from, Timmy, because they got to go for it this year.
But yeah, definitely Washington has to wind it up and go for it because they are not going to be the same team in 2019 as they are this year. There's no doubt about it. They're going to lose.
They will be better. I am convinced that there is something wrong with that Washington system, the Washington team. I don't know what it is, Timmy. I have a feeling, and I have nothing to back this up. I have a feeling it starts with Mr. Harper. I think there is a problem there. I don't know what it is, but
that's interesting.
I mean, I mean, pound for pound, that there's no other team that's – maybe the Dodgers have as much talent as them, but pound for team, there's no other team that's got as much talent. They haven't won a divisional series in the Bryce Harper era. Not one.
No, they haven't, and the clock is a-ticking. Eric Fetty, have we permanently moved the bar on Mr. Fetty, Rich?
What do you mean, the bar up? Part of that, I mean, they screwed him over. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think Eric Fetty's a fine pitcher. I mean, it's a mid-rotation kind of guy. But, I mean, come on, they screwed him over. Start him off as a starter. All of a sudden, well, we got to bring you in as a reliever. So they moved into the pen. Now we're going to bring you back as a starter. And then he hurts himself. I mean, of course.
Right.
So let's move him back, stretch him back out. Let's make him a starter. And let's see what he can do. I think he's a solid mid-rotation starter. But hopefully they haven't done permanent damage to him. I don't think they have. But, you know, Timmy, guys come up. They're highly ranked and rated guys coming up. And if he winds up, a 3.75 ERA with, winning 12, 13 games a year, I mean, he'll make $15 million a year and be a disappointment in your fantasy and dynasty team. But that's what most – that's what most good pitchers
do. Yeah, no, it's just at one point in time he was looked at as being a little bit more than a mid-rotation type, wasn't he?
You know, maybe. He wasn't Lucas Giolito. I think Lucas Giolito has a chance to be a one or two. He's the guy that you wanted. And, of course, the White Sox knew. That's why they got him. Fetty will be a nice player. I mean, you wish he threw from the left side, throws from the right side. He's good. He's very good, Timmy. But I think he's just your typical mid-rotation guy.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. Luis Garcia, shortstop. You got him ranked at number 7 in the system. Top 15 shortstop with extreme risk. What is that extreme risk, Rich?
Well, I mean, he never walks. I mean, his approach is very poor at the moment. He's very, very young.
Okay.
He's only hit the GCL. So, I mean, what is he, 4 years away? If he can develop that that hit tool, I mean, there's definitely something there. I mean, the thing that you love about him, he's a great athlete. He's got plus speed. He's got good bat speed. He's got all those tools and talents. I mean, is he the next Victor Robles? Could be. Is he the next guy that doesn't make it out of Double-A? Possible as well. So that's what I mean by extreme risk. But if you're a guy that's in Dynasty League, and I write this all the time, you always want to, particularly if you've got 15, 20, 25 minor league players, you want a couple of Luis Garcias out there. You don't want a whole roster full of them. But you want two or three guys out there that are bets. And to me, he's one of those guys that you take an extreme bet on and you just close your eyes for the next couple of years and don't move him and see where he is in 2 years. And if he's in low A batting 230 with, striking out 25 to 30% of the time, then you move on. But you need to give a talent like that a chance to blossom.
Okay. No, fair enough. Anything further you want to add on the Washington system before we move on to our 30 seconds with the Marlins?
Yasiel Altuna, who is my emerging prospect. There's something there, Tim. Speed.
Okay.
He's another kid that's they spent almost $4 million for this guy, J2, last year. There's something there. So it's a guy that, again, the Nationals are very good at identifying Latin talent. Look at Juan Soto. Look at Victor Robles. Sometimes you got to go on the history of that club, and they know what they're doing. There'd be somebody, again, one of those risk-reward guys, somebody I would be considering investing in a Dynasty League.
Okay. No, fair enough. Moving on to the Marlins, are you buying in right now on Braxton Garrett?
No. I mean, I'm not really buying in on any of these. I'm not buying in on any of these guys. I mean, I do like Brian Anderson, but are Trevor Rogers next? And Trevor Rogers didn't play, pitch. Braxton Garrett's injured. I mean, they're all injured. I don't know if I buy in on any of these guys. So,
I guess the next question I would have is on another Braxton, and that's Braxton Lee. Okay. Is he going to get rushed now that Miami's in the process of gutting their active roster? Would you be intrigued at all by his potential with what's going on in Miami?
I mean, still pretty young. I mean, it's potentially. I mean, no plus tools, Timmy. So for fantasy, you're always looking for that guy that, you know, can give you a 30 home run pop. And people say 30 home run pop. Again, average is 20. So you're looking for somebody who can hit 30 home runs or steal 20 to 25 bases. And I don't think he has those kind of skills. So I think he's ultimately kind of a fourth outfielder.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm sort of reaching here because this is pretty dreadful, Rich. It really is.
it's not good, Timmy. It's not good at all. It was bad to write. And I was pretty excited when I, you know, because I like Brian Anderson. I've always liked it. And then I got, they're famous names in here. Braxton Garrett's a famous name. Trevor Rogers, Tyler Kolek. Those are famous names. And Dylan Peters, we talked a little bit about him last year. I mean, it's a guy that saw some time in the major leagues. And, I like Dylan Peters okay. But there's a lot of mediocre 3, 4, 5 pitchers there. And, you know, it's just not a very good system. And Nick Niedert, is he number one overall in the system now? I don't know. Oh, by the way, the Angel system? Don't forget they got Maton as well. So they've had a good offseason. They've done quite well.
Yeah, I guess the only other question I could come up with looking at Miami is Chad Smith, your emerging prospect. Can you tell us a little bit about Chad Smith? Seems a little bit old for an emerging prospect, but based on Miami's system, he could be young.
Well, I mean, there's a chance he's a closer. So
right.
I mean, he's, what, 22, 23 years old already. Drafted a couple of years ago. He throws hard, you know, knows how to pitch. I think he'll move through the system quickly. And last I looked, I think if they do the baseball thing right, they'll be looking for guys like Chad Smith who are under team control and cheat to be their closer because they don't want to have to give anybody else with that's going into arbitration the chance to save any games. So this is the kind of guy that will have a chance to be a closer as soon as they come up. And then once he's arbitration eligible, then they'll either trade him or they will stop using him as a closer, then becomes a setup. So you know the routine, Timmy, and I think Chad Smith is an interesting name because of that.
Well, yeah, and you know, you look at Miami, Johnny Giavitella could be a starting player on that team next year. Isn't that scary?
I didn't even know Johnny Giavitella was on that. It came from the Orioles system, right? So wow, that's sad.
Well, They signed him to a minor league contract, but they're going to need somebody at second base shortstop, and he could be it. That is scary, isn't it?
Wow. That's really sad, man. That's very sad because, you know, they're going to get rid of all the guys we talked about. They're going to strip it down to the bone. I just hope they get some players out of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Okay, unless you have something further to add with the Marlins system, let's move on to a real good one in the Braves.
Very good. No longer as good because they lost some really good players. But it starts with Ronald Acuña, Timmy.
Yep, it certainly does. All we've heard, okay, is good things about Acuña, okay? When's he going to arrive? And what are the negatives? Like, the guy can't be that good, can he, Rich?
Yeah, I think he's that good, Tim. It's a kid who is barely 20 years old. You know, he was exhausted in the Arizona Fall League, and he was by far the best player. I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, he showed power, he showed speed, he showed the ability to get on base. He did that in 3 levels last year. I'm not sure what else this guy has to do. I mean, there are weaknesses. I mean, he doesn't control the strike zone that well. I mean, he gets fooled by off-speed pitches. I mean, he is 20 years old or going to be 21 years old, so I mean, there are weaknesses, of course, but he's as good as they come out of the minor leagues. This is a guy that's got oozing talent and has performed at a very young age at very high levels, and that's what you look for in players. And, you know, the success quotient of a guy with that profile and those results at his age are usually carried forward to the major leagues. So, you know, it's high ceiling, low risk, man. It don't get much better than that. Now, he could flame out, but you don't get much better than that.
Yeah, no, it was just something that crossed my mind because a year ago he was playing in Australia.
Yeah.
He came over he came a long way in 1 year, didn't he? Amazing.
He just turned 20, Tim. 20 years old.
Yeah.
And this guy will be in the major leagues as a young 20-year-old. And, you know, again, dominated every level that he was in. And the Braves are obviously very high on it. The whole industry is high on this guy.
Yeah. When do you think we see him, Rich? Are we gonna see him before the All-Star break?
I have him as an April 25th, something like that. You know, I think what will happen is they'll make sure they have 7 years of team control because they learned their lesson from hopefully Jason Hayward, because they brought him up to start the whatever the year that he came up with, and they lost a year of eligibility. And I don't think they'll do that with Ronald Acuna. But, I mean, if he doesn't get hurt in spring training and his balls out in spring training, like which we think he probably will be, I think they'll just bring him on up before early May. That's my guess.
Okay. No, fair enough. You know, I look at the pitching in this system, and at the top end of their system, and then I take a look at your number two prospect in the Braves system, and it's Kyle Wright. Mm-hmm. Number two with that many talented pitchers, why four so high, Rich? What do you see in him that maybe you don't see in the others?
I think he was the best pitcher, most advanced pitcher coming out of the draft last year.
Okay.
I think the ceiling is a solid number two, and I don't think he's that far away. Luis Gohair has probably got the highest ceiling, and he's obviously ready now because he had some big league success. So if you want to put him as a top pitcher and Kyle Wright number two, okay, I'll give you that. But I do think that those two guys, and again, I like Allard. I like Ian Anderson. I probably like Ian Anderson higher ceiling than Allard. They're all really good. But, I mean, you know, I think Kyle Wright has got the size, the stuff, the pedigree. I think he's not going to be very long in the minor leagues. And I think he'll wind up kind of being that guy that's got the most polish in that organization. The highest ceiling, perhaps not. But I think the guy with the combination of ceiling, lower risk, and that's why I put him there.
Okay, no, fair enough. Where are you going to be drafting Luis Gohair in redraft leagues this year, Rich? What are your thoughts on one season leagues?
If I can get him as my fifth starter, sixth starter, I'd probably get him there. So I'm going to try to draft him as a guy that no one else will be drafting. I'm going to try to take him a little early in redraft leagues this year, which I hope to do more of this year as I've done in the past. Because I mean, he's a lefty, throws hard, and had some success at the big league level.
Okay, fair enough. You got a choice: Kobe Allard, Ian Anderson, or Mike Soroka. Who are you taking?
I mean, I got Allard first. I think I've got Ian Anderson second, and then Soroka. You know, I've never seen Ian Anderson throw yet, but everything I hear about the kid is like there's something there. Kobe Allard's lefty, so I mean, you always like that. But the ceiling's not as high as some of these other guys on this list. But Ian Anderson, I hear really, really good things about. Soroka is a guy that is a little bit more control and command over those other two players, and that's why I have him at the bottom of those three. Yeah, so that's why he's ranked number three out of those middle three pitchers. But if you wanted to say out of all three of these guys, who has a chance to be like a fantasy ace 1-2 kind of that Jacob deGrom kind of pitcher where it's, you know, you're going to pick him as your 12th or 15th pitcher off the board. I think it's Ian Anderson has that type of upside. If you're telling me who's going to be in 7 or 8 years, who's going to be a guy that has been on my dynasty league and it's just been 14, 15, 16 wins, a 3.50 ERA and, you know, 7 strikeouts per 9, it's probably Kobe Allard. I mean, he'll be that kind of rock steady guy, but he won't be the guy that can blow you away. I think Anderson out of those three is that pitcher.
Is that pitcher, right? Okay. do we see Austin Riley this year? I'm predicting somewhere around the All-Star break, but I'm very bullish because I own him in a couple dynasty leagues. But is it possible that we see Riley this year, Rich?
Oh, I think so, Timmy. I mean, he was in Double A last year. Big time power. He's going to strike out a ton. I mean, you know the drill. I mean, if you can stomach a .230 batting average, you'll get 20 to 25 home runs, maybe more, in a bad Braves lineup to start with. In a couple, 3 years, it'll probably be a very good Braves lineup. You know, that's who Austin Riley is. So if you can stomach the lower batting average, I mean, he's the guy that you want.
Okay. Last but not least, and I'm going to pronounce this the Canadian way, which is probably the wrong way. Tell us a little bit about Christian Pache.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Pache or Patch. He's Latin. So, I mean, I don't know. So, he's a guy that this system is just stacked, Timmy, and it's power, speed, looks like he can hit, there's a lot to like with this guy. And a guy I drafted last year in a couple of dynasty leagues, I think I dropped him. I don't remember. I have to go back and take a look. But I was high on him last year. He might have been my emerging prospect last year. I don't remember. But, again, a guy that the Braves signed in 2015, I believe. They paid a lot of money for him out of the Dominican Republic, and he wasn't one of those guys that they cheated on, so they got a chance to keep him. And I think he has a chance to be very, very good, and particularly from a stolen base standpoint. So, you know, he's not Ronald Acuna, but, you know, if you're bummed out that you have Ronald Acuna and Christian Pache or Patchy or however it'll eventually be pronounced and from a Anglo standpoint, he's a guy that you might want to get.
Okay, interesting. Anything further to add on the Brave system before we move on to the Mucks?
I think we talked about just about them all. Let me look back through this list. Kevin Maton, it's just a shame what happened there. Bryce Wilson is, again, another guy that's a really good pitcher. I mean, with all of these pitchers, Timmy, you got to believe that two or three of them are going to hit. You know, who are they? I can't tell you definitively, but I think there's six or seven pitchers in this list, and I think they'll all be major leaguers. And you would think out of those, two or three are going to be legitimate major leaguers out of it. So that's a really deep, good system, even though they had to get back some of those Latin players and got penalized going forward on the major league draft.
Okay, fair enough. Let's take a look at the Mets. In 3 years from now, Rich, who's the first baseman in New York? Pete Alonso or Dominic Smith?
Dominic Smith.
So you're still bullish on Smith over, say, Alonso?
Yes, sir. I like Alonso. I mean, you know, I would have got him ranked fifth. I think Dom Smith – look, I've said from – day two, I think I wasn't sure after he in Savannah, he didn't hit a home run or hit one home run the whole year. Savannah was low A. So I went to Savannah and realized that it's the wind blows in and it's a gigantic park. So it's an extreme pitcher's park, and they moved out of there. And I think moved to Columbia, South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. The Braves low A affiliate have, but I think Dom Smith, I think the power is going to emerge. The kid can hit. He's a great first baseman. He's going to get on base a ton. This is, to me, a 20 to 25 home run guy with a 300 batting average and a 370 kind of on base percentage. He's going to be a sneaky, good kind of player. Poor man's Freddie Freeman type thing. You hope he has that kind of power, but I think he's going to be a really good player. And Pete Alonso, why I like him, I mean, I don't think he's close to the kind of player that Dom Smith will be. That's just my opinion, but I'm huge on Dom Smith.
Yeah, no, I was just curious because I saw your write-up and was very, very favorable on Alonso, so I just wanted to throw that one out at you.
Yeah, but it's still number five, so I was on the top 20 first baseman. So the question will be around, will he be able to hit enough? And I think that's, you know, he's an aggressive hitter and so forth. So I think that's where the open issues are. I like the player. Don't get me wrong, Timmy, but you know, the break, by the way, the Mets system's down. I mean, David Peterson's an okay pitcher, more of a command and control kind of guy. And Justin Dunn just didn't develop like I thought he would. I mean, I love Andre Giménez, who I have in a bunch of Dynasty League. I like that guy. I mean, but it gets pretty bleak as you get down.
Well, yeah, you're still fairly bullish on Tomas Nito. I see. I like what I saw in Arizona. I was impressed with the kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be a good second catcher for you. It'll be interesting what the Mets eventually do with Travis d'Arnaud, which I think he's been a catcher long enough to for everybody to conclude he's not really a very good defensive catcher. So,
right.
And quite frankly, he's not a very good offensive player either. So he hasn't developed like we all thought he would develop. But is he the long-term answer at catcher? I don't know. So.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Desmond Lindsay, Rich.
Definitely down this year, Timmy. He looks the part, but you know he didn't play very well, and then he got hurt. So we don't know. They get Tommy John surgery, so we're not sure. You know, it was a down year because of that. So only made it out of low A, so still a couple of years away. But I mean, there's talent there. He's got upside, Timmy. He's got some pop. He's got some speed. I think he can hit. Will he come back healthy from his Tommy John surgery? When will that be? Don't know. But he's still in the list. But you know, if there's one guy that becomes number one next year on this list because you know health has passed him and now you know he's letting his tools shine. I mean, it could be Desmond Lindsay. He does have that kind of upside. But it was a tough year, so you have to ding guys. The first didn't perform well, and then second, you know, are down for the entire season.
Yeah, I was going to say, how old is Gavin Cecchini? Is there an age where you no longer become a prospect? Because he's got to be getting close, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I rarely have somebody at 23, 24 as a top prospect. But, you know, the Mets prospect, the list, Timmy, is just not very good. I mean, it's
– Right.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it used to be just a couple of years ago. It's funny. I mean, the Mets and the Yankees, like everybody thought the Mets were the superior team 3 years ago because they had all the pitching, and it completely reversed in just a very short period of time where all those guys got hurt. And, you know, and now you see a Yankee farm system that's deep, it's good, still deep, and they promoted a lot of those guys, and the Mets are just a shell of themselves because all the pitching got hurt.
Right, and there was no backfill there to fill in the blanks. So.
Well, I mean, they gave away Michael Fulmer, you know. I mean, that would have been a nice little chip to have. They one of the guys, I was trying to look how old Gavin Cecchini is. He'll be 24 years old in 12 days, Timmy.
Okay.
So one guy that everybody loved coming into the season, he got off to a really good sport. And I know that our good friend Alan Sarvinas was all over Jordan Humphreys. Jordan Humphreys had Tommy John surgery. So, yeah, so he had a great first half of the season. He's probably lost for all of next season. So he comes back at the beginning of 2019, and all of a sudden – he returns at age 23 and likely going back to high A. So all of a sudden his stock takes a huge hit after he got out of the chute extremely fast and hard. So it's just a real shame that sometimes this happens and injury sets in and you get guys that just stumble.
Fair enough. On that note, maybe it's time to move on to a system that does have a fair bit of talent, and that's the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yes, it does, Timmy. It's very, very good. And poor Roman Quinn. No Roman Quinn. I should have at least put a line in the intro about Roman Quinn. I didn't. I still love Roman Quinn. But, Timmy, at some point you just can't. I mean, you just look stupid putting his name on the list. At some point you just have to move on.
Well, that's the first thing I noticed. And my question was, has the Roman Empire crumbled?
At some point, Timmy, you got to stay healthy. And the poor kid can't stay healthy. And we're talking like not at all. I mean, this is bad. I mean, he's been hurt every year he has played.
Yes, and you don't get full marks for consistency in that department, do you?
Unfortunately not. You know, I will say that I made a decision after finishing up these top all these writings. I mean, again, another 100,000 words. I can't continue to do this. I've decided that not quite decided, but I'm going to now go down to 15 players per system. So I'm going to go deeper,
right?
But I'm going to write a paragraph about each player. So I'm going to do, because I have more fun doing the research and less fun writing.
Right.
So I'm going to go down to a paragraph, a player, but put more more players out there. That's what I think I'm going to do.
Well, and you know what? I can relate to that, and it makes a lot of sense, because I know when I'm doing my rankings, I really like the idea of quick hits. You know what I mean? You rank 50 or 60 first basemen, and on the top 30, you write maybe one sentence or one short blurb. I would rather go with more players and a less thorough narrative on those players than the other way around. I think it just works a little bit better, at least for me it does. So I can relate to what you're saying, Rich.
Yeah, and a couple of my readers said the same thing. I've never read John Sickles' stuff. I met him once at that forum.
Right.
But somebody told me to go check his stuff out because he does top 20s and writes a paragraph. So I went out and looked at one of his systems. I don't even remember what it says. But I'm like, daggone it. This guy gets more traffic than I do, and he's writing a lot fewer words than I am. So I'm thinking, all right, well, you know, and I looked at everybody else's stuff. Like, I think I write more stuff than Baseball America does per player. And I'm like, what the heck am I doing? So it's killing me, Timmy. I get two-thirds of the way done, and I literally hit a wall and I can't get over it. It is grueling to get the last 10 systems out. It's grueling.
And let's face it, Rich, do people read all of the information, or are they just looking for basically the rankings with a quick scouting report and where you potentially have them arriving as far as our game is concerned? You know what I mean? People, from what I've been told, don't do that much reading.
Yeah, they don't, Timmy. And I can assure you, I think in each division, I put one crazy sentence in each article, and I've only had four or five comments saying that was either clever or did you know that you said this, you know, like one of those things. That tells me a lot. It would be like your grandmother's pants are on fire. I think I wrote that somewhere. And it's like, you know, so you destroy, and you know, people aren't reading it. Like you bury it in the number seventh. You know, it's crazy. And it's just like, all right, that's enough. So,
you know, Getting back to the Phillies for a second, I'm gonna get you to analyze a trade I made with one of these Phillies. Now I just want your thoughts on it, Rich. I traded Rich Hill for Cito Sanchez. What do you think?
Cito Sanchez. Straight up.
Straight up.
Cito Sanchez got a premium fastball. I've seen him pitch. I like him a lot, Timmy. I think he has a chance to be something. He's a ways away, though, right? I think did he pitch in high A, or was it just low A? So I saw him in low A, so that's all I know.
Right.
I think there's definitely something there. I mean, Rich Hill is, what, 35, 36 years old? He can be very, very good.
He's 38.
I think that's the right – that's a good trade, Timmy, because, I mean, you're going on the come with Sanchez. I mean, he could, you know, have Tommy John surgery and crush your soul. But Rich Hill can have stretches of being very, very good, but it's not going to last much longer. Let's face it. So I think it's good. I mean, I think you kind of sold high on him to get a top 50 prospect. I think that's actually well done.
Okay. No, I was just curious, and it gave us an opportunity to discuss Mr. Sanchez. J.P. Crawford, 23 in January. What's his 2008 line, Rich? Home runs, stolen bases, and batting average.
You know, he's a guy that I think is going to take a little while to develop the power. So I'm going to say 8 home runs, maybe in Major League Baseball, 12 home runs. I think it's well below average power. I think he'll steal you 15, 18 bases. But I think he'll hit. And so it feels a little bit like Dansby Swanson with more upside.
Okay.
That's a similar kind of player for me. I was dreadfully wrong on Swanson, who didn't hit at all, and which I was surprised at. I do think eventually J.P. Crawford has a lot more power. I think you see 20 to 25 home run power, kind of a la Francisco Lindor, but I think initially it's below average power for sure.
Okay, yeah, I guess one of the things I was getting at with both Crawford and Scott Kingery, who you've got at 1-2, is, you know, how long before we see these guys in the big leagues? Right now they're blocked with what? With Galvis and who's blocking?
Cesar Hernandez? Is it Cesar Hernandez?
Right.
Is he still there? Yeah.
Yeah. Right now there's two major leaguers sitting there. Are they going to hold up the progress of both Crawford and Kingery for that long? Because especially Kingery, I've got huge bet on Kingery.
No, they're not, Timmy. Cesar Hernandez is barely a major leaguer. I mean, what's his on-base percentage? I mean, yeah, he's got speed, and we all like that in fantasy, but Major League baseball teams don't care about fantasy at all. I'm sorry to be the truth teller on that, Timmy. Sorry about that. It's not fake news. That's just the way it is. They don't care about us fantasy players.
Right.
And Galvis is he's fine. He's a nice little player. He's a utility guy, and they're not going to stay in the way of J.P. Crawford and King, and they're going to give Kingery a shot, and I think they're both going to get significant playing time this year. Is it going to be I think the season starts early, like March 28th. I don't know, but it's going to be before the All-Star break. Well, you will see Crawford and Kingery, you know, up the middle, and that's what they're going to go with. They're not going to go with Freddie Galvis and Cesar Hernandez. In fact, you can see Hernandez moved in this offseason. I would not be surprised.
Okay. In a redraft situation, would you draft Kingery before Crawford this year? What are your thoughts as far as Kingery is concerned on his possible production for 2018?
Well, Kingery's got more fantasy-friendly skills than Crawford does. And Kingery had the crazy blow-up year last year. I don't think the hit tool's as mature as Crawford. I mean, Crawford, can flat-out hit. So whereas you might get more power and speed from Kingery, particularly more power, I think the safer play is Crawford, and that's how I've ranked them. But if you tell me that we look at Baseball HQ at the end of the year and Kingery is a $12 player and Crawford's a $7 player, I'll go, okay, yeah, I can see that. But I think long-term, Crawford's the far superior player. But if you're going to tell me this year, is Kingery a chance to be a better fantasy player, I would say there's a chance of that.
So you're going to be drafting him in redraft leagues for a bench slot or a late-round pick?
I'm going to try to grab him in things like NFBC leagues and things like that. And because there's power, there's a little bit of speed. Yeah, I mean, he never walks. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be his that's going to be his problem, is his batting average in your batting average league. That's going to be his problem. Obviously, on base percentage, that's going to be his issue. So
okay, fair enough. Tell us a little bit about Jojo Romero.
Love Jojo Romero. I saw my computer has frozen on my page, Timmy, so I don't know where I have him ranked from.
Number five.
Number five. So I have him above. So I have Sixto Sanchez next, and I saw Jojo. I like him a lot. I mean, he's not got the big fastball like some of the other guys have, but man, the kid can really, really pitch. So again, I saw him in Lakewood out on the Jersey Shore, and there's a lot to like with the guy. So, and nobody's heard of this kid. So, again, young pitcher,
you want a couple of those
on your dynasty league team? I mean, go get them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got him ranked above Adonis Medina. They're ranked 5 and 6 back to back. And I'm assuming you've got both of them. You know, they're both pitching at the same level, they're both with a 2020. ETA. I'm just assuming you like Romero just a bit better than Medina right now, but it seems like they're on the same sort of projected schedule.
I think most sane people would have Medina ahead of Jojo Romero. I'm not sane, Timmy, but I think that Romero has got better pitchability, better control, and while the upside is higher on Medina, I think Jojo Romero is the safer pitcher, and I think he'll move through the system a little bit quicker. So that's why I have him up. So, but if you're telling me Medina becomes a stud and Romero becomes the number three, yeah, I think there's a chance of that. But yeah, sometimes the rankings, you know, you can't be digitally accurate on that. I like both of the players a lot, and it just depends. That's why you have to read the capsules, Timmy, because in there I go into gory details as to why I like this player above another player, and I probably do talk about those two. But read the scouting report that talks about the big fastball and so forth. And you hear big fastball and long arms and limbs and so forth. I mean, just know that there's control problems, and those guys have a tendency to get hurt and so forth, versus guys like JoJo Romero. You can't ever predict health, but it's a guy that looks like he'll have a lower risk tolerance than Medina will.
Yeah, no, all I read is just the name and where you've got them slotted in up top, Rich. Sorry.
Great. Just like everybody else does, Debbie. Appreciate that. Well played, by the way.
You're well. I had to throw that in there. It was just sitting. It was low-hanging fruit, Rich, so I couldn't pass it up. Our number one pick from last year, July 220, August 156. Are we lowering our estimates potentially on Mr. Moniak?
Yeah, Tammy, I saw him play. It was bad. It was really bad. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, this is the number one overall pick. And, yeah, you figured maybe Philadelphia's doing a little games with they were doing the Carlos Correa over Byron Buxton thing that the Astros did, and they picked up a couple
right.
other players. I think Lance McCullers was one. Yeah, and Philadelphia tried to do the same things. It probably wasn't a legit 1-1, but, it, you know, going to the draft was a top-five player. I'm looking at the guy going, this guy's not very good. I mean, Timmy, he was swinging at everything. I mean, no idea what the difference between a ball and a strike was. And I forgot who was out on the mound that I saw. Guy didn't have very good stuff. I mean, his slider wasn't very good, and he had no idea what was coming out of his hand. It was not good.
Well, yeah, I know reading through, and I, just to show you that I do read, the first thing I picked up is my confidence has been shaken. That's not a good thing, is it?
No, I mean, and again, I think I also wrote in there, if I recall, that maybe he just got tired because he started off the season well and then petered out towards the end. So if you're a glass half full guy, then you'll go, oh, he just got tired and he'll be just fine. When I saw him, Timmy, he was really flailing out there. And this was not a number one overall guy. And, you see what happened with Mark Appel. I mean, sometimes even today teams miss, and I'm not saying that the Philadelphia Phillies miss with him, but if you think this guy's going to be a first round draft pick in fantasy, nope. I don't even see him as a top 5 round, 10 round guy. I mean, this, I think if a top 50 outfielder, you hope he's a draftable outfielder. I mean, I'm that down on him. So,
well, okay. No, Fair enough. I you know, like I said, when I saw that line, my confidence has been shaken. It got my attention right away, Rich. Anything further to add on the Philadelphia organization?
Well, if my cursor would scroll down to me, I could tell you who's down at the bottom. I don't even – oh, there we go. Medina, we talked about. Franklin Colom, still a guy I'm very, very happy with. It's a guy that you definitely want to – Jorge Alfaro, we didn't talk about that, Timmy. He's down on my list. I mean, at some point it feels like he's been on this list forever. He still never walks. I mean, he's got tremendous bat speed, so I think there's power potential there. But, I mean, is he really a top 15 catcher? That's where I have a ceiling? I don't know. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, you know, when you start looking at the bleakness that we'll call catcher for 2018, Mike Zunina is going to be a top 10 catcher probably. So I think there's still hope for Jorge Alfaro. How's that?
Yeah. Timmy, that's it. I mean, it's a really good system. I even got Cornelius Randolph, who has not really done it yet, but I've seen him play, and boy, that guy looks like he should be good. So that's all I'll say. He should be good. He's not, but he should be good. So
he should be.
But anyways, he should be good.
Yeah, that was my assessment coming out of the Arizona Fall League. I just wasn't all that impressed with what I saw in Arizona, Rich.
Oh, I didn't even know he was at Arizona. I didn't catch any games. Well, maybe I did. I'll have to back and check my notes. But I saw him a number of times the last couple of years. And I look at him. He looks the part, man. Looks like, I mean, he looks great.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I think that pretty well covers the NL East for today, Rich. I want to thank you for letting me interview you. Fun evening as always.
As always, Timmy, and I need to go take the dog out and call it a night. Timmy, we've got one more Sunday. We've got next Sunday normal show. Then I think we're going to be off on Christmas Eve. And then we'll figure out the show on, I guess it would be New Year's Eve. We'll figure out what we're going to do with that show. I'll be at our new beach house, hopefully. And I don't know if I have internet connection yet, but we'll figure something out. And we'll make sure that it happens, because otherwise we get yelled at. So I don't want that to happen.
Well, no, and I'm real sensitive these days, Rich. I can't get yelled at. I've made it a rule. How does that sound?
Very good. Timmy, look, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Sounds good, Rich. Be well, my friend.
See you.